Hi, everyone. Before we get started on the story, I wanted to remind you that my memoir, Both Sides of the Fireline, is available at any of your favorite bookstores, whether it's in your neighborhood or it's Amazon. You can purchase it wherever you like. The book, Both Sides of the Fireline, is published by Chicago Review Press, and I hope you enjoy the book. So let's get on with the story for today.
Oh, okay.
Good morning, everyone. This is Bobby from Bobby on Fire, and that was Anne doing our pre-intro. So, Anne, say good morning.
Good morning.
And John is here.
Good morning, Bobby.
And, of course, Reva is back from a fire investigation or accident investigation situation for her work, and she's back with us.
Good morning.
Good morning, Reva. So, we've already had our pre-warm-up. We've had our coffee or cold caffeine, and we're ready to go. And I want to start off by saying that this is a busy time right now in the country for wildland firefighters and firefighters in general, because many of the folks on the wildland fires are from fire departments, just like I used to do when I was on a fire department. And so it's a busy time, and I am thankful for everybody out there doing hard work. You know, the only time the firefighters, oftentimes the times where people appreciate them is when the world's on fire. And otherwise, a lot of times, especially the wildland firefighters, tend to get a little bit neglected, I think. Unlike the city firefighters are more visible. So I want to thank everybody right now. But the story I'm going to tell you today is about a firefighter who passed away from cancer about a month ago. And this gentleman was someone I worked with for several years on a incident management team, and he and I were operations section chiefs on the same incident management team. And you know, if you're a regular listener or a firefighter, you know what the incident management teams are. Those folks, the people showing up to manage the large fires, they're the overhead team that is the functional framework that manages that incident and supervises all the firefighters. Well, I'm going to use his name. Unlike most of the stories, when I tell a story, I try not to use people's names. And although we've slubbed up a few times and mentioned the names, and sometimes I've gone back and edited out names, and sometimes not. But this time I'm going to use this gentleman's name because I want to honor him. His name was Mark Segrist. And Mark he was like a brother to me. He was like the brother I never had. Now, I've got two brothers, but I'm telling you, his friendship and mentoring and honesty was the kind of relationship that I valued greatly. And when he died last month from cancer, it affected me heavily. And I was kind of weepy for at least a week or so. And so there's so many great stories I have, Mark's stories, that I want to share with you. Now, if you've listened to many of my stories, you know, I've talked about Knucklehead number one, Knucklehead number two, or Knucklehead number three or four. He was always in those top knuckleheads. He's usually one of the knuckleheads in my stories. Now, he's a good firefighter, outstanding operations section chief, very well experienced, and he worked for the Forest Service, and he worked in timber in the Forest Service, and then did fire on the side, like a lot of the Forest Service, especially in the old days. So he came up in the old organization where you did both. You've probably heard some of these stories, and so some of the stories I'm probably going to zip through kind of quick, but I want to give you the flavor of Mark. And so let me start out with the first one. If you remember a story about something about the Arctic Circle on one of my stories, this incident management team I was with was on a fire in Alaska. We were relatively near the Arctic Circle. And it was light all night long, you know. Sun dips down behind the horizon around 2, and it comes up around 3 or something, you know. And so, this is my first fire with this incident management team. I didn't know these guys. And the incident commander and the other two ops chiefs and I, they want to get together every night and kind of review how the things are going on the fire. And so, Mark, he was this big man. So let's get an image of him. He's a big man. I don't know. He had to be about 6'3" or 4'5". I don't know. And he was hefty built. He had large shoulders, and he had this booming voice. Every time he talked, it was this booming voice. So, but he could be very thoughtful and quiet. And when the time was right, he was very, very quiet and would listen to what you're saying and that sort of thing. But his go-to voice was this big booming voice. And now I don't know these people. And I'm in this remote camp up in the middle of Alaska, north of Fairbanks, along the Hall Road, the road that goes between Fairbanks and the North Slope, I guess it is. And so we're out in the middle of nowhere, and it's about 9 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night, sun's still up, And Mark spins his lifts his hand up in the air, his arm up in the air, spins his finger, he says, "Saddle up! We ride for the brand." And I'm looking around, and my friend, a gal who was the planning section chief on the team, I looked at her and I said, "What is that?" And she said, "Don't ask me. That's operations. Operations are the firefighter types." And I was like, "Oh God." So anyway, we saddle up. We ride for the brand, which I never heard that before. I didn't know what it was referring to. But I guess it was referring to, hey, we're on this fire, we're working for the team, the incident commander wants us to get together and talk. That's what I figured out later. But all I knew was, saddle up, we ride for the brand. So this trip, we're driving the car, we're in a four-door, like a four-door pickup truck, big four-wheel drive, and I find out later, we're going to the Yukon River. Because if you're going to be a real Alaskan, I get told by Mark, you gotta pee in the Yukon, you gotta make love to blah blah blah, and you gotta let's see, there's some oh, wrestle a bear. And I was like, well, yeah, I'm not doing any of those, so it's okay with me. Come on, we're going to the Yukon. And the Yukon River was not that far up the road. So it's like, okay. So we get to the Yukon, and Alaska, the interior of Alaska in the summertime, 99% of the biomass is mosquitoes up there. And it's completely it's just total mosquitoes. And so I've got a parka. I've got my fire pants and boots on, and I've got my fire shirt, but I've got this parka over the top of me just doing nothing but trying to keep the mosquitoes out. And they're like he and Mark is going, "Come on, Bobby, you gotta go pee in the Yukon." Like, no, I'm not sticking anything out of my clothing that I don't have to. It's not gonna happen. So these three knuckleheads go and they pee in the Yukon. All right. So then they come back to the truck, and we get in the truck, and I don't know if it was the incident commander or if it was Mark says, "If we turn right, we can be to the Arctic Circle in no time." And it's like, in no time? Really? How far is it? Well, it's another, hour and a half north. I'm like, well, camp is like another hour back the other way. We won't be getting back to camp until 3 in the morning. Oh, it'll be fine. It'll be great. We'll all take turns driving. And Mark is looking at me, Bobby, what do you say? You're gonna go? We're gonna good? Because they're waiting for me to say, yes, knuckleheads, let's go to the Arctic Circle. So we go to the Arctic Circle. What am I going to say? I'm new on this team. I'm not going to say, no, I'm going to go back to camp. So, of course, turn the corner and we go right, heading up the Hall Road to the Arctic Circle. Now, imagine at the Arctic Circle, it's a parking lot. There's a big parking lot to say Arctic Circle. There's a big sign there with a line down the middle of the sign. And that line represents the Arctic Circle. So north of that spot, the sun never goes down this time of year, and south, it's south of the Arctic Circle. So We get there, it's like, great, you know. Now, we're not driving a marked vehicle, so that's a good thing. People don't know we're in charge of this fire that's burning down the road. And Mark and our incident commander, I can use his first name, Dave. So Mark and Dave, these big guys, they're responsible people. The incident commander, the senior ops chief, these experienced guys are holding on to the sign and jumping back and forth from in front of that line going, now we're in the Arctic Circle. Now we're out of the Arctic Circle. Now we're in the Arctic Circle. And I'm standing there going, what in the world? Who are these people? Well, they were really good firefighters, but they were knuckleheads. And Mark was like, he was like the leader of knuckleheads. And I loved him for that. And so that was a little bit about that. Oh, but then we were going to take turns driving home because it was, you know, 3 a.m. Those jerks instantly fall asleep. I'm driving. I drove the whole way back to camp. Of course, while they're snoring, we pull into camp like, I don't know, 3 or so a.m. And, of course, we went south of the Arctic Circle, so the sun went down, but it's still bright as day. And anyway, that was the Arctic Circle and Mark. Now we're in, now we're out, which I never got that, but it was pretty. And they sang North to Alaska the whole way. North to Alaska, you know that old TV show from the 50s or 60s. Anyway, so that's a little bit about Mark in that particular incident. I want to tell you, I think if you read or listened to the story about when we were staged, our incident management team was staged waiting for an assignment, and he had gotten a new phone, and it was in the box, and he was trying to program his phone, and we're sitting in a big circle. And I've got my phone down under this table so he can't see me. And I had gotten his phone number off the box already, so I already knew his phone number. He didn't know I knew his phone number. And while he's trying to program his phone to get it started, you know, this is in the old days. It wasn't done at the Verizon store. You did it when you got it out of the box. And he's trying to program phone numbers in or get everything established. But I keep calling his number and then hanging up. And all he knows is happening is his phone keeps beeping. And then I hang up before anything can happen. And my number's not in there. So he doesn't know it's me calling him. He just knows his phone is beeping. And then it stops beeping. And then I call again and it's beeping. And then it stops beeping. Now, imagine 45, 50 people in a big circle sitting at tables. And we're outside. So we're sitting on the grass, sitting on chairs. And the incident commander is trying to conduct business here. And Mark is sitting right next to Dave, the incident commander. And I'm across them. I'm across the circle. And I keep doing this. And I can see Mark getting so frustrated with his phone. He doesn't know what in the world is going on. Why is his phone keep beeping? And he keeps pressing buttons like he's going to fix something or silence something. And I'm sitting there over. And I wait, you know, maybe 30, 40 seconds between calls, and I call it again, and it starts beeping. And now he's taking that phone, and he's shaking it in his fist, and he's hitting it hard. I'm laughing so hard, I can barely stand it. And I turn around backwards, and the tears are streaming down my face. Well, the division supervisors who work for us, they're like, they think I'm crying. Oh, my God, what's the matter? What's the matter? I'm trying not to laugh out loud, you know. Pretty soon, everybody in the circle starts figuring it out that I'm screwing with Mark. And the incident commander, Dave, finally looks at me and says, he points at me and is like, is that you? And I nod my head yes. And now everybody knows what's going on. Everybody's laughing. Mark hasn't been paying attention. He doesn't know what's going on. He just knows that his phone is screwing up. So finally, Dave says to Mark, Bobby's got something to tell you. Bobby, you want to tell him what's going on? And so, anyway, it was one of my best pranks in my fire service career, you know. I'm very proud of that one. I don't have a ton of them. That was a good one. And I had a follow-up to it years later. Years later, I've promoted up to the regional office. I'm in charge of fire operations for the whole northwest, and I'm in a area where there's a bunch of public meeting rooms, and I can hear his booming voice. That booming voice of his talking to this crowd, and he's talking to the administrator types. And I thought, I bet any money he doesn't have his phone off. I have an idea. So I'm standing outside the door, and I call his phone. I hear it go off, and he instantly silences it. He has to pull it out of his pocket, silences his phone. And then I call it again. And his phone is ringing, and I hear him yell, "Bobby!" So my boss was in the room, and he yells, "You see what she's doing to me?" So anyway, everybody came out of that meeting later. It's like, "Oh my God, you too. You're still at it." Yeah, well, we're still at it. And then I think not too long ago, I told a story about, I think it was the one, I don't know if it was the one I told, it was called "What Would I Do Without Men?" It was the story where, unbeknownst to me, he wanted to take a route out of the fire we were on through this area of deep, deep dust. It's that soil that pulverizes and turns to puff powder, or there's lots of different names for it. And I was having to open up and close these gates, these little ranch gates that are just wire. You know, they're not like a metal steel gate. They're just a wire and sticks holding the gate together. And I'm up to this dust, like up to my knees. Now, this dust, it doesn't go away. It gets into everything. It's like talcum powder. It's the consistency of talcum powder, except it's dirt. So I had to open up three of these gates to get down, and when we got to the bottom, he says, "Well, you finally," "I guess you proved yourself." And I looked at him, I was like, "What do you mean?" I was already a little bit pissed, you know, because there was a good way to get back to the fire camp without going through all this. And he says, "Well, you know how to open and close the gate, and you didn't close the gate with you on the wrong side of it." Like I was going to shut the gate with me on the wrong side. And I looked at him. I said, "You idiot." I kind of cussed him out a little bit, you know. It's like I grew up working out in the desert and blah, blah, blah. And anyway, he just thought that was hilarious. And he had this grin on his face like he was so accomplished, man. He really accomplished. He had me walking through that crap.
Was that when you first met him?
That might have been the fire after the Alaska fire. And then one of the things that happened, so you work together with someone, you're working 16, 18 hours a day. And even when you're not working, you're there together, you know, I mean, you leave each other to go to your tent, to go to bed at night. And then you, 5 o'clock, you're back in the ops tent looking at the latest information, the intel from the fire, getting ready to implement the plan that you wrote for the day before for this coming day. So you're constantly working together, and you develop a good rapport. Now, on a fire one time we were on, and we laughed a lot. If it wasn't serious, now, Mark was all business when it was serious. When it was time to fight fire, it was all business. But we laughed a lot when it wasn't, you know, when you had that opportunity to relax a little bit. And you'd be tired, you'd be exhausted, and so you start to kind of wear down a little bit. You know how you get a little dingy when you're getting tired. Well, this was at the end of a fire, and it was later season, so it was getting cold, and I think we might have gotten a little drizzle, so... we had gotten a line around the fire. Now we're just trying, it was a big heavy timber fire, west side in Washington State. And so somehow or other, we just got the giggles. And now no one's around us. The firefighters are mopping up. We're sitting up on the top end of the fire where we can see things. No one's around us. And we got the case of the giggles. We're laughing. I don't remember what we were laughing at. But we, you know, laughing where this... tears are streaming down our face. Now here comes the incident commander, Dave, And the local agency administrators in the truck with him. And we're like, oh shit, we gotta tighten up here. We gotta act serious, act professional. And here comes the ensign commander and the local agency administrator. And we're trying not to laugh. And we're trying not to look like idiots, you know. But our faces are red. And I'm trying to wipe all the tears away from my face. And we act professional long enough, you know. Yeah, the fire's in good shape. The firefighters are mopping up. We're doing this. Yeah, okay, everything's good. Yeah. And the incident commander and the local agency administrator turn around to walk back to their trucks. Well, they get about halfway back to the truck. And Dave, the incident commander, turns around and looks at us like, what are you idiots up to? Now, he couldn't tell what was going on, but he knew something was up because he could just tell on our expressions. And when he turned around, he kind of shakes his head like, oh my God, these idiots, you know. And he walks back to his truck with the agency administrator. And as soon as they got in the truck and they turned around, Mark and I just burst out laughing. Again, over what? Who knows? It wasn't important. The important thing was that here's a guy that was such a good professional firefighter, but we could have so much fun together. And everybody thought of him as a mentor. He had lots of experience. He'd been around a long time. He had that personality. It was always positive. He was always going to find a way to be successful. And through all that, we could just laugh our asses off. So the last little story I got to tell you is it's in the culture and the lore of this one incident management team that he was on for so many years. When we were on this Alaskan fire, I mentioned earlier, you know, when we were into the Arctic Circle, that was my first time out with this team. I didn't know them. And I was field operations, so I was doing all the operations out in the field, supervising everything and that. And so this is Alaska. There's very few roads. It's not like, you know, you can go to the next road to try to use it to start your line construction and all that. And it's pretty tough building line in that country. A lot of it's tundra. You know, it's brush. Ridges have black spruce and some alders and stuff like that on them. It's very, very difficult country. And it's, you can't dig mineral soil because there's no mineral soil. It's permafrost down underneath all this junk growing on top. So anyway, there's a road. There was a road, and I was going to use that road to burn out from. And I remember the incident commander saying, well, how big is this burnout going to be? Now, this is my first qualified operations section chief, type 2 operations section chief assignment. So, you know, so they don't know me and I don't know them. And I said, we got to burn out from this road. And the incident commander says, well, how big is this burnout? I said, it's going to be about 100,000 acres. And he was like, 100,000 acres? That's huge. And I said, well, it's Alaska. Our next opportunity is going to be the Arctic Ocean or something. I don't know. This is it, you know. And so we have all these conversations with the other ops chief, Mark, and so, okay, go forth, you know. And I talked to the locals, and I had to plan how we're going to burn this out. So I go up to this road. There's this road up there we're using to burn out from, and on the end of it, it's a high point, and you can see a good long ways from there. So I can see the whole area we're going to burn out. So I'm up there kind of directing things. We've got the helicopter, helitorch, you know, lighting the fuels on fire. I got the holding crews in place, and everything's going pretty good. And every time the weather would shift a little bit, we'd have to stop because, you know, up there, you're always on the edge. It's either going to rip, burn, or you can't get it to burn. So every time the conditions would change, which could be just a cloud coming between you and the sun, that could be enough to stop you from being able to continue the burnout. So we're doing all this burning out, and it's really going well. But Mark and the incident commander, Dave, they come up to my spot to kind of see what's going on because they don't know me either, and they don't know if I really know what I'm doing. And they come up to kind of check on me to watch the burnout, and it's a good view. And but they're not involved. They're not telling me what to do or anything like that, but they're sitting back. Now, this road connected to a whole bunch of little homesteads, you know, for miles and miles around in this part of Alaska. It's a dirt road, and there's a river nearby, you know, up there. Transportation is usually mostly just the river, but in this case, they have this road. And so there was, once in a while, you'd see a car or an old pickup truck go by. So while I'm directing the burnout, this little beat-up, old, like, Datsun pickup truck shows up. Now, imagine this thing is, like, rusted and rattling, and these two old people are in the truck. The wife is driving. Now, in my memory, they were really old, but they might not have been old. They might have been like that pickup truck. They were kind of rusted and worn out, you know, from living up in that country. It's tough country. And they were tiny. They were like shriveled up. And then it was like such a match of that old pickup truck in my mind. That's what I remember. And so they see all this activity going on, you know, the firefighting and the fire burning and all that. And they pulled up to this pull out wide spot on the road. And I'm ignoring it. I've got my back to them and I've got my face looking at the fire. And Mark and the incident commander were sitting down there behind me. They were not interfering with my operation. And but this truck pulls up at these two old folks, and they get out of the wife, this little old lady, gets out of the truck and is like, what are you doing up here? And Mark's like, well, you know, and I can hear Mark having this conversation with her. And so this is how the conversation went. So they're having their lunch. You know, that's what Mark and Dave were doing. They were having their lunch up there. And this lady says, what do you got in that sack? Well, it's our lunch, Mark says. And he's got this really polite, very, very sweet voice back. Well, it's our lunch, you know. What do they give you for lunch? Well, we've got a ham sandwich. A ham sandwich? Well, a ham sandwich is not big enough. That's not going to feed a big man like you. You need more than just a ham sandwich. Well, he says, well, there's more. She says, what do you got on that ham sandwich? Well, there's cheese. Well, cheese is good. Well, what else? She says, what else you got in there? Well, he says, I've got some mayonnaise. Well, mayonnaise is good. Yeah, mayonnaise is good. But that's one sandwich is not good enough or for big more enough or enough for a man like you, your size. Well, there's more in here. Well, what else is there? Well, he starts pulling out, you know, they put candy bars and they put fruits. Well, I got an apple. An apple? Well, I guess an apple's okay. And I got some Skittles. Skittles? You don't need no Skittles. He says, well, here's another ham sandwich. Well, okay, a second ham sandwich, that's good. And she's going off about about the ham sandwich and the whole lunch. He has the whole entire, he's got the whole entire lunch bag emptied out. And so that lasted for about 20 minutes, this whole conversation about his lunch. So I didn't really pay much attention to what was going on at the time. I could hear all this yelling and stuff. But we get back, and of course, he tells a story. And Mark was the best ham sandwich storyteller ever. That story became a part of this team. Now, when you go to Alaska, a lot of times you come back on a charter and a charter plane. And we were coming back on a 727, and there was a few hotshot crews with us. And they were sitting towards the back of the plane. They don't want to be associated with the overhead team. And so the overhead team is sitting in the front of the plane. Now, these charter flights, they make sack lunches. And these sack lunches are kind of like standard. They're the same wherever you go. They're contracted. And they give you a sack lunch. As you get on the plane, they give you a sack lunch. And you have it for the travels home, you know. So, because they're not giving you, this is not like, you know, they give you service like you would on a commercial flight. So anyway, someone yells at Mark. They know the story about what happened up on that ridge you know, with that lady yelling about the ham sandwich. And they said, hey, Mark, what's in your lunch? Now, he was facing forward. Someone asked him. Then someone says, what's in your lunch? And he turns around to face the back of the plane. Now, what he doesn't know, because he's a giant of a man, what he doesn't realize, there's a flight attendant coming up the aisle and is right behind him. But when he turns around, his head is now probably 2 feet or a foot and a half above hers. She was kind of tiny. And he shouts, ham sandwich! It's a ham sandwich! Now, this poor flight attendant, she didn't know what was going on. She just, this big, booming voice of this man hits. So she hits the ground. She thinks there's some attack. She hears yelling. She literally falls to her knees to get away from this mass mayhem that's going on around her. And she was not happy about when she found out this was just Mark telling a story. So, anyway, the ham sandwich story is famous in my old team and the team that's still going on. But that was some of the funny stuff about Mark. But Mark was a mentor to us. He was the heart and soul of that team. He was smart. He was thoughtful. But he was generous. But at the same time, he had this side to him that just was so hilarious. I think, you know, when I was talking to Dave earlier, the incident commander on that team, he just talked about how Mark was like a brother to him. And I thought that was exactly the way I felt about Mark too. He meant so much to us as a group professionally. He meant so much to us professionally. We loved him. And when we lost him a month ago, that just really, really hit us. There's one of the personalities of the firefighters that are out there protecting, you know, our wildlands and our communities. Everybody looks professional, everybody acts professional when you need to. And as you've listened to my stories, you know that we don't always act professional when we don't need to. But Mark was the consummate firefighter. But what a great human being. What a hilarious personality he had. And he is going to be missed so bad. And I just wanted to honor him with some of these stories. And I hope you've enjoyed it. And next week, we will... I've got some topics I want to... some stories about leadership I want to talk about, and Mark is a good example of that, and I've got some other good examples of leadership that I'd like to talk about next week. But in the meantime, I want to thank everyone for listening, and I want to ask you to continue to share the links to the stories with those folks who you think might enjoy it. I think I mentioned last week, we're way over 100,000 downloads now. So this is story, I think, number 54 or 55. Downloads over 110,000 now. So that's kind of cool. So with that, I'm gonna wrap it up. Thank everybody for listening, and we'll see you next week.